on AM 1130 by 99.9 FM, Prescott, Chino Valley, and Paulden 95.5 FM, Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, the talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, it's
Hammer Time.
Waking up with the YCCA. Hammer Time is brought to you by Lawhorn Plumbing, Verde Valley Alarm Services, Prescott Home Safety, Greenlee Designer Surfaces, Get Right Mitigation, Franklin Plumbing, The Blind Brothers, Made to Order, Vicente Landscaping, Barrett Propane, and Badger Roofing. And now from the studios of KQ&A, it's Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA. Here's the Executive Director of the Yavapai County Contractors Association, Sandy Griffiths.
Good morning, Prescott, and welcome to Hammer Time. This is Mike Enders with Bentry Custom Homes coming your way in lieu of Sandy, our XO for the XO meaning executive officer for our Yavapai County Contractors Association. She's normally here at the head of the table, but she's down in the Big Valley today. I think it has something to do with her Achilles heel, but I'm going to accuse her of being down there shopping. She must be going after more shoes to accommodate her new Achilles. What do you think, engineer?
Shopping for pumpkin spice.
Oh, there you go.
It's that time of year, you know.
It is that time of year. So anyway, welcome to Hammer Time. We've got a great show lined up for today. Last week, we had a super show with Title Restoration. Sherry Pennantale was good enough to come in. Russ Parker let her, who owns Title Restoration, let her come in and made her available to explain what all Title Restoration does, and very, very good company. So if you have any need for that, please, please don't hesitate to give them a call. So this week, we've got a great show lined up for you. We've got David DeBoer from Creative Outdoors. I know we don't normally introduce our guests until we get through with the introductions, but I'm just excited to have him in here, so I wanted to let you know who we're going to be talking about. So buckle up. We've got a great show, hopefully, lined up for you, as always, informative. And so stay tuned. You're listening to Hammer Time, brought to you by Yavapai County Contractors Association, and we're airing on Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, and 95.5 FM. So stay tuned, grab that second cup of coffee, fill up that OJ, or as Sandy likes to say, grab that chocolate milk, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Once again, here's your host, Sandy Griffiths.
Good morning, Prescott, and welcome back to Hammer Time. As I mentioned in our opening sequence, Sandy is not with us this morning, but she has faithfully promised to be back next Saturday. So we wish her well in her recuperation from her Achilles operation, and hopefully she'll be hobbling right in to meet us next Saturday. So, but we have a great show lined up today with David DeBoer from Creative Outdoors. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Appreciate you coming in to see us. We have had you in before and talked about Creative Outdoors. Why don't you tell us a little bit about when the company was founded, how you came up with Creative Outdoors name, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we came up with the name to indicate we didn't just do landscaping. We did everything outdoors. But I started here in the mid-90s, and Creative Outdoors was fired up at about 2000, 2001, and we expanded our operations at that time.
Terrific. How many people do you employ?
It fluctuates. You know, with the labor market up here is pretty tough, but we'll have anywhere from, you know, maybe 8 or 10 guys to about 15 or 20 guys. At one time, you know, we were running 45 guys.
Wow. So it just depends on what you can get. Different crews for different functions, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Great. So, but as you mentioned, if you wanted to give the impression, and indeed you do, do more than just landscaping. So why don't you give us an idea of all the different facets that you do?
Sure. We do, you know, obviously pavers. That's our forte for many years. But we do all types of landscape. We do pool patios. We do outdoor kitchens. You know, we're into the artificial turf like everybody has to be now. So whatever you need outside, we are able to do that.
You can handle. And I believe on your pavers, you're used to using the Belgard product.
Yeah, we used to be more exclusive Belgard, but, you know, we take what we can get now. And a lot of these other companies that provided more products are really more in line with what people are wanting to use or more available at the time. So we, you know, we're well-rounded in all the products. Yeah.
one of the things, it's a great community to live in, but we are strapped sometimes with availability of not only labor, but also product.
Right. And getting up here from Phoenix can sometimes be difficult.
Yep. And who wants to go down to Phoenix to pick it up? Not me.
Yeah.
So give us an idea of some of the more recent projects that you've done or something that comes to mind that you've really had fun doing.
Well, we recently completed, well, it was several months back, but we did a great big one up Williamson Valley area.
Huh.
And it took removing hundreds of tons of rock and malapai.
Wow.
And we put in a very large custom pavered, not only the paver, but the borders were special made for this job.
Huh.
And there was a total redo of all the landscaping. And that one will be submitted for Hardscape Awards here coming up in a few weeks. And we, fingers crossed, we expect to do really good on that.
Oh, that's super. So what institution do you apply for the
So there's, used to be ICPI, but now it's more Shaw, Southwest Hardscape Association. They'll process your awards. And it's a big to-do. It's like our pat on the back Oscars down
sure.
there. It's a big expensive dinner. Everybody shows up and... we've done well at those. We've won 22 of those.
Wow. And how big of an area does that encompass?
It's a several state region. It's usually the Southwest. So
wow.
It's a 3-4 state region. A lot of the entries are not from Arizona.
Huh. Well, that's, you've done very, very well then if it's multi-state. So it's a lot like the, from a builder's standpoint, Pacific Coast Builders Conference, PCBC,
right.
National awards, et cetera. So that speaks very well of Creative Outdoors. So give us an idea as far as your office. Do you have office personnel? Do you run the office? How's that?
No, my office is run by my wife.
Uh-huh.
She has ladies in there, and I stay at her business. And but she's always into my business. But yeah.
Trying to figure out time cards, who worked where,
yeah,
who worked
yeah,
when.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's one of the nice things about the family businesses. The wives do seem to, and I can speak from experience, they seem to have a pretty good handle on the paperwork.
Yep.
So, and they definitely try to keep us out of trouble. So what else can we talk about as far as Creative Outdoors that separates you from your competition?
Well, the main thing that separates us is integrity, and I am Master Certified. There's only a few of us in 4 or 5 states in our region, and I've been certified master for, I think, about 12 or 15 years.
Okay.
And so we instill that quality into our guys, and our guys are always taking snapshots and selfies with our work.
Huh.
Even just a cut that was difficult, they'll take a picture of that, and they're, proud of that. And the process to install it is a set process. We follow that set process. A lot of our competition
doesn't. So that master certification, though, that's regarding the pavers.
It's a hardscape. Yeah,
hardscape.
I'm certified hardscaping for retaining walls or pavers.
Okay.
I'm a master certified.
Gotcha. So when you're doing, as far as retaining walls, do you do stacks, not only the pavers, do you get into stack boulder retaining walls?
We will dabble in the boulder retaining walls, but we're more into it's a more permanent process using the segmental retaining wall blocks.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And those are like a giant paver.
Yep.
For lack of better description.
Yep, like working with big Legos.
Yeah, but they're heavy Legos.
They are, yes. And there's a process. It's a system. It's not just the block. It's the base for the block. It's what's going behind the block. It's the drainage for the wall.
Good.
So it's actually a system. Anybody can take the block and stack them, but put them in the correct way is going to give you a good, lasting product.
Right. Yeah, if those aren't... put in, again, just like a house, it starts with a good foundation. If you don't have that, and I'm sure you've seen it too, where people call and say, gee, I need somebody to come out because my retaining wall has collapsed. And that's generally mm-hmm. a sign that either the backfill material and or the process and or the lack of proper drainage, both surface and subsurface, like a French drain, weren't put in appropriately.
Yeah, that's correct. And we've done a lot of work where we're replacing other people's work, or we drive by and we look at other people's work, and it's a Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's just it's got to be done correctly.
And that is a little scary when you see some of these walls that technically, over 4 feet they're supposed to be engineered.
Right, correct. Yeah, you have to
but there's certainly a lot of, especially do-it-yourselfer walls that are stacked up maybe 6-8 feet, and you go by and you see those things that are leaning, and it's just a matter of time before they collapse.
And the walls aren't, the block isn't even made to be stacked that high.
Right.
They've gone beyond the ability of that block.
To accommodate it. So, and that certainly brings up the significance and possibility of injury. So for the do-it-yourselfers out there, you really need to get the advice and have the professionals come and install it, because it is a long-term benefit, is also a safety benefit.
It can cost you more to fix it than it did just do it right the first time, or it can create property damage if they got a little too close to your house.
Sure, exactly. So as far as outdoor kitchens, you'd mentioned that. Give us an idea of some of the more interesting kitchens you've put in.
One of my favorite ones was down in the Camp Verde area. We did one there. She had, I think, 20 components in her outdoor kitchen.
Wow.
I think the whole thing was several sections. It was around 40-some feet long. Had a kegerator and a grill and, you know, a lot of components. But the kegerator was, that was pretty special.
Yeah, I'm sure that was.
He was waiting for that to be done.
So did you get a chance? Did she invite you back to check it out?
No, I haven't had any, no beer at it. But it, we had a, you know, cupboard, and we had lighting, and she has a pool table in there. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so, it's a pool patio.
Besides the hardscaping and landscaping, do you do the structural work like the gazebos? And
we work with a general contractor in town who will build them from scratch or do the kits.
Great, because that's always a nice accommodation when you're doing an outside kitchen area to have that thing at least surfaced off to where if it's rainy and whatnot, it's not diluting your stakes. So
there's been a big jump in pergolas in the last couple of years. Yeah. There's a lot more people want to enjoy it during the day or, you know, or in foul weather.
And there's a lot of new pergola product that's come onto the market. You're seeing a lot of it being advertised, not only for professional installation, but for, again, for the do-it-yourselfers. But I still go back to saying, even for the do-it-yourselfer kits, in my opinion, you're better off to have the people who are in the trades come out and put those up so that they're put up right.
Correct. Yeah, we work with actually another installer here in town who has his own line, and it's a pretty popular line.
Cool. So is that a wooden structure or a metal line?
They're the metal structures. Actually, I don't know if I can say, but it's Sunburst.
Yep.
We like to work with those guys. They're really good, real professional.
Yeah, they're still located, aren't they located right on Sheldon?
They're, as far as I know, their shop and their display is out in Prescott Valley.
Oh, okay.
It's right off the highway.
Okay, gotcha.
Kind of near Jen's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. So where are you headquartered at, David?
Well, our yard is actually out by the airport in the industrial air park. Uh-huh. But we have several yards and several of the developments that we work in. My office, we actually run it out of our house for tax purposes.
Sure.
But so we're kind of spread out all over the place. But we mainly work in the Prescott Valley area. But we do have jobs. We work in Lake Havasu. We work in Phoenix.
Wow.
We've done jobs in Sholo. I've done jobs for a builder from here in Albuquerque. Huh. You know, if they need it done and they need it done right, we'll go where it is.
Go where it is, huh?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully when you're going long distance like that, it's a big enough project to make that worth
sure.
your while.
Sure. We've done a few big ones, actually, even in Utah. We had gotten our license to work in Utah. We did an award winner in Kanab, and we did an award winner over in St. George.
Wow, that's neat. And you just mentioned a key word, and that's licensed. And that's another thing that people need to really pay attention to when they're looking for hardscape and or landscape work, is to make sure that vendor happens to be licensed.
That's essential,
yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of things happening out there right now. I'm working on bids and people telling homeowners what they can do, and it's not even close to what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, licensed, bonded, and insured, and you know what can and can't be done. We've even had landscape companies that have run gas lines, and obviously that's a no-no. So as you mentioned, as far as the pergolas and outdoor structures, you have a license that enables you to do certain things, and other things that you can't do, you bring in the people that are licensed.
You got to stay in your lane.
Yep, exactly. That's a good way to put it. So we're going to have to take another break real quick, and we will come back. Again, you're listening to Hammer Time, brought to you by Yavapai County Contractors Association. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Once again, here's your host, Sandy Griffiths.
Good morning, Prescott. We're happy to be bringing you, through Yavapai County Contractors Association, our Hammer Time weekend report. Again, Sandy is out with her, hopefully, last bout with her Achilles heel. She's down in the valley right now, but as we discussed earlier, I'm sure she's going to make full use of that trip down there to do a little shopping, maybe bring back some new shoes to adorn her new Achilles surgery. What do you think, Mr. Engineer?
Did it cover up the scars?
Yeah, there you go. I'm not sure what – we'll have to look and see. I'm not sure what kind of scar she's going to have. We will find out next weekend because she's promised to be back. But we're lucky to have Mr. David DeBoard from Creative Outdoors here with us today. And we're just talking about all things landscape. And one of the things that we were talking about just a second ago off air was FireWise. That certainly is an issue within our community. We have areas that are in what we call the WUI, which is the Wildland Urban Interface Area zones. And those have mandatory FireWise requirements, certainly with the new construction. But why don't you talk a little bit, because that is an issue that we should all be aware of, whether you're in a WUI or not. How much do you get involved in FireWise requests, David?
We do quite a bit of FireWise work. Not as much as some of the big boys here in town, but we do quite a bit of it. And even we have maintenance contracts where we are paying attention to the FireWise needs of that house, and we'll take care of that. But anywhere you drive now, you see a large number of trees are dying. It's just been too dry. It's probably the worst I've seen here as far as all the, you know, the ponderosas and the pinions are dying.
Right.
And so it's an issue now, and it's going to be a bigger issue here in the next year or so. There's a lot of trees are dying. So it's really important to maintain your barrier from, especially all the fires that we've had here over the years.
Agreed.
And we've had people moving here from areas that have been burned out. So they're really, that's the first thing they want to do. Take care of the fire hazards around their house. So we do get a lot of calls for that. If it's a big, you know, if it's a big job and there's a lot of tall trees, we'll pass it on to people we refer to.
But gotcha.
Your standard stuff, we get in there, we cut it out.
Great. One of the things that people need to understand too, though, is that there are certain requirements to be quote unquote FireWise approved, which the fire department has basically set up a criteria to meet. And so when you're getting a landscaper involved or a company such as David's involved, he knows what those requirements are. And so you want to make sure that the company that you're dealing with is aware of the FireWise requirements. Otherwise, you might be spending a lot of money only to find out that when they have packed up and left, you're not technically FireWised yet.
Sure. Yeah, I know that Sandy has sent out that memo, but a lot of people are paying for a FireWise treatment of their property, and they're not getting the full deal, and then they're failing. Their insurance companies come back and inspect, and they're saying, this doesn't meet our standards.
Right.
They'll get threatening letters, you know, saying, you've got to get this FireWise correctly.
Yeah, so it's twofold, not only the insurance companies, but the there are certain grants that are available in certain areas, and to be eligible for those grants, certain hoops that you have to go through with the fire department and the HOA, for example. But again, if you do that work and it's not up to FireWise standards, you're not going to be approved for that grant. So, at least for the disbursement of the monies for the grant. So, again, make sure that you're dealing with somebody that understands the FireWise program. So as far as Creative Outdoors, David, you do both residential and commercial, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, what kind of commercial projects have you tackled?
We've not so many large ones, you know, and we did some commercial work on some charter schools. We've done a credit union here in town. We did a bank in town. But we don't really pursue there's a lot of people bidding on those, and even out-of-town companies that want to come in and do the commercial stuff.
True.
So we're there if they need them, but, you know, otherwise we're pretty busy here.
Gotcha. As far as the residential, do you do, the annual or semi-annual where you come out and update or
we do cleanups. Some people have a annual or semi-annual cleanup. We also have maintenance. We do monthly maintenance or bi-weekly maintenance to keep homeowners from having to go out and pull their weeds or,
sure,
you know, clean off their pavers.
Yeah, the maintenance contract is what I was trying to get my tongue to wrap around and talk about. So, and certainly maintenance contracts, when you have irrigation systems, that's very beneficial And even though people are tending to go to artificial grass, for example, there still are irrigation systems that you still have to be responsible for your bushes, shrubs, and trees. So with the artificial turf, let's get into that a little bit, because there are certain benefits, not only for water usage, but explain to people some of the benefits of going to artificial turf.
Well, obviously, the first thing is the water usage. Water is getting so expensive and scarce here.
Yep.
We first started putting in turf back when it didn't look anything different than indoor-outdoor carpeting. But they've gotten really good with the turfs now. For if you're going to have pets on it, there's a special line for that. Mm-hmm. If it's heavy traffic, you get a special line for that. If you want to combine your putting turf with some rough so you can actually use the grass for something, you know, we can put in your little putting greens. There's a little bit of maintenance with artificial turf. It's basically just keeping it clean. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with real grass, you're going to be using quite a bit of water, especially for the first installation. We don't do much seed work because it's usually a 2 or 3 step process. We usually do all sod. And like I said, it's a lot of water and it's a lot of maintenance. You're going to have somebody who's going to mow it. You're going to have to adjust the sprinklers all the time. You have to replace the sprinkler every now and then. You got to monitor your system. You don't have to water every day. Sometimes it's got to water every other day or every third day. But it gets really hot. You got to beef that up. So you got to know how to run that timer clock. So there's a lot involved in that. And the electric valves, you know, you can have 3 or 4 or 5 for a good size lawn, and you're going to always be in those boxes working on something.
Working on them. Yep, exactly. Now, do you get involved in, if someone has a yard, backyard that's full of natural turf, and they decide that they want to go to an artificial turf, do you get involved in that?
About half of our turf jobs are, they've shut the water off.
Really, huh?
The grass is dead. Let's get it out of there. So we have to get in to pull the dead grass out, pick the borders out, and then you got to take out a layer. You got to put in AB just like you would for a paver. So you got to have about 6 inches of AB under there and compact it. And they got to watch that. There's a lot of guys installing turf around here. They're just putting decomposed granite or dirt in there. That doesn't work, especially if the snow sits there and it gets really wet. You're going to step in. You got a sinkhole. It pulls the borders in.
Yep.
It's a big redo. So they got to make sure those guys are putting AB under there and compacting the dickens out of it.
Again, there are companies here, unfortunately, that aren't licensed, bonded, and they're kind of like the storm chasers that come in after the hailstorms, and they make a heck of an offer to you. Install looks great until they leave, and then it's a 20-20 warranty, 20 miles or 20 minutes after they're gone.
Right, right, right.
So
there is a, you know, I think the only downfall to turf is it does get extra hot, but if that's an issue or if they want to use the grass during the day when it's hot, we actually install irrigation systems for your artificial turf.
Really?
You only got to pop it on about a minute. If you got the right infill in there, it'll stay nice and cool. The kids can play on it. The dogs can play on it. It doesn't get brutal hot.
I'll be darned.
But that's one of the biggest complaints that people are like, I don't want the turf because it gets hot. But you can cool it off.
Interesting.
And it doesn't take that much water.
I was not aware of that. One of the other benefits of taking out natural turf and going to the artificial is that the city, at least the city of Prescott, does have a rebate program to where, based on the amount of turf that you take out, you'll get a credit for that I believe they just apply to your water bill. But that's another great thing to look at. So it's kind of a 2-for-1.
Yes.
So with the I'm fascinated about cooling off that turf. Is it like a regular pop-up head for?
Yeah, you just use a regular pop-up head. They don't have to actually overlap like you would for lawn. You just have to touch end on end. So it's not as extensive as you would need for like a real grass. But yeah, you just pop it on for a minute or two. We have a charter school out in Prescott Valley. We just did, and they have an athletic field there. I think 6 sprinklers cover the whole thing.
Wow.
It's only on for about a minute or two, and the kids can play out there for hours.
Cools it down. Interesting. Yep. I wasn't aware that turf would heat up that much, so that's good to know. There's always an alternative.
Yes, there is.
So, David, we have to take another quick break. Excuse me, again, you're listening to Hammer Time, brought to you by Yavapai County Contractors Association. Fill up that third cup of coffee, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Once again, here's your host, Sandy Griffiths.
You know, we were just talking, welcome back to Hammer Time. We were just talking a little bit off the line with David DeBoard as far as sod, which we were talking about just before we went on break. And Dave was just telling me where the sod farm is here. If someone is putting in a small patch of natural grass, where the sod farm is?
Yeah, it's in Chino Valley. If they want artificial turf, there's several vendors around here that Prescott Dirt has a good selection to pick from. And there are a couple other vendors that are selling it now. It used to be you had to go down to Phoenix to get it if you wanted it, but now there's guys around here carrying anything to hook you up.
Great, great. And you'd mentioned also that it's not just a matter of rolling that out. Talk a little bit about the installation process and what all's involved.
Well, with artificial turf, you need to roll it out and it's got to get a little bit of heat into it, and it wants to naturally curl back up. So you got to get out and let it lay out while you're doing a lot of your prep. And then you start on one end like you would with carpet, and then you have knee kickers and you're tightening it and you're nailing down as you go. And we get it nailed held down, and then we go and you cut the borders out, and then you got to nail it off. We nail it off about every 3 to 4 inches, and then there'll be some field nailing too. Depends on what kind of traffic's going to be on that. Then when you got it all laid out, you go with it's called an infill. You can get different types of infills for that. Some, you know, if you have a lot of dogs, they'll absorb the ammonia from the urine. And then there's, other infills. There's going to be heavy traffic, different types of infills you can use on that.
Gotcha.
You go through with it's a weed eater with a broom on the end, and you stand them all up, and this, you know, makes it look real.
Now, as far as the nails, I'm a little curious. Are those, you know, compared to a framing nail, for example, are they a use staple nail or?
No, we have pulled up some older that have those old staples in them, but really you just use like a 6-inch finished nail for your putting turfs. You use like a finished nail. And for outdoor, you know, just your roughs, you would use just a regular, you know, a standard nail.
Interesting. And that, because of the base underneath, that'll stay in the ground.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Holds it in place.
I had envisions of 10-inch, 12-inch spikes that you
Well, we do pull some of those up from the old days. It's like, wow. What is it, like railroad spikes holding this stuff down? And sometimes some applications, if there's gophers in your backyard, a lot of times it's problematic if it's not installed right. So we'll mix a pea gravel in with a little bit of Portland. Makes it a little harder for those boogers to dig through it.
Gotcha.
And we'll even lay like a galvanized, like a stecco netting underneath it so they can't dig through it.
Huh.
And if people have dogs that like to dig things, mm-hmm. that's also a common thing to do is lay that wire underneath there so they are able to get the turf up. The damage is minimal. They can get it back down and get it pinned.
Interesting. Huh. So it's not, there's a lot more science to it than just
there is. It's
it.
A system. It's not just what you look at. It's got to be done right underneath it.
You'd mentioned groundhog, prairie dogs, et cetera. What kind of varmints are you dealing with, not just for the artificial turf, but for all your landscaping needs?
Oh, it's we've got everything here. Yep. You know, in different neighborhoods, more and more now, but we've got to plant according to what the deer are going to let us plant.
Mm-hmm.
You got javelina that are roaming around tearing things up. We got squirrels, so if people want to have raised gardens, you got squirrels and chipmunks that like to take whatever they're growing. So and then you got your gophers and your squirrels digging underneath everything. So you've got to account for the animal activity too.
Yeah, and I'm sure that, as you mentioned, it varies by area. Where we live, we see a lot of deer, and we've got, in my opinion, unfortunately, a lot of javelina also. But we don't have any gophers.
Yeah.
And very few squirrels. But the javelina certainly can do their damage. And I know that there's, from time to time, I'll come across flyers that from nurseries that talk about javelina-resistant type of plants. Is that something you deal with?
Yeah, they have especially waters. They have a really nice list where they'll tell you what the deer won't eat, what the javelina won't eat, but they don't read. You know, if they're hungry or they're thirsty, they're going to rip it out.
Yeah.
They want it. It doesn't matter if it's on the list or not.
I know when we first moved up here in 2000, we spent a weekend putting in new flowers and plants and shrubs and whatnot, not realizing that we had javelina, not realizing that they like to eat the roots. Even if it's something that they don't like on the surface, they'll pull it up and chomp on the roots. Finished a whole day's worth of planting and went out to dinner, came home, and it looked like somebody had been playing hand grenades because everything was ripped up and scattered around. around.
It's a big waste of money. Yeah, and we deal with homeowners. They want this, they want that, or they came from California, they came from Phoenix, this is what they want. And I said, well, you can't, because you're going to draw in the deer, you're going to draw in this, you can draw in that. The deer love to eat roses, even with big thorns. They don't mind it.
I was amazed at that, because where we were living at the time had a lot of mature rose bushes, and I was very surprised to see that. They really like the roses.
They'll chew on it like chewing gum. My guys will be wearing leather gloves, and you'll get thorns going through those gloves, and they're bleeding, but the deer will just sit there eating it like it's not a problem.
They just laugh at you and say, yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Takes the plaque out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I must admit, I haven't seen many deer at the dentist, so they must know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the plantings that you do put in and trees that you put in. Are there trees that you find that are especially indigenous, whether they're indigenous or not, but that are good trees to plant up here that have a pretty good high survival rate?
Well, you know, it's been the last couple of years, it's kind of changed. It's harder to get the newer evergreens to make it through the hotter summers. Mm-hmm. But if you know what you're doing and you know how to set the water, you can make it doesn't really matter that much. But I'm really skeptical about putting in aspens nowadays. You'll see a lot of the aspens, they're dying everywhere. Huh. And I had worked with Jim out at, you know, PB Growers before he had passed away. And he was trying to diagnose and how to treat a lot of these aspens, bringing them in. You'll see mature aspens turn and die just within a few weeks. So
really?
We're not big on the aspens anymore. But there are some, I mean, you can get into any of your maples, do well up here. We've planted a lot of Colorado blue spruces this past mm-hmm. year. We have really good, you know, results with a lot of trees, but some will avoid.
So it is interesting you're talking about the aspen, certainly in Colorado, which is the same, you know, mile high city. It's the same elevation. You go up to Flag and the aspen up there, you think that, gosh, this is a great climate for it. But that's interesting. Is it a particular plaque or plague that's
Well, Jim had indicated that his sources told him that it was a nematode that was in the root system. So when they dig these trees up and they bring them in there, the problem with it is in the ground when you bring it here.
Gotcha.
And it has to do with humidity and heat and amount of, you know, of moisture in the ground. Something activates them. And when they do, they'll take that tree out really quick. Huh. Well, the other varmints, we'll put wire baskets around them. We'll plant them in baskets so you don't get gophers digging into them. So you overdig the hole, you wrap it with a wire, then you put it in there. So if there's a hole next to the tree, you know he's in the area within the tree.
Gotcha.
So it's easier to get him out of there. But don't use the gases, gopher gases near your trees. It'll mm-hmm. kill them.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize until not too long ago that the aspen, I don't know what you would call as far as their network of rooting, but they spawn from roots of the other aspen trees, so
sure,
they come
yeah.
up as little sucklings.
There's a whole forest of aspens somewhere that's actually one tree.
Yeah, exactly.
I forget where that is, but yeah.
I think that's the article I was reading about, so quite interesting. So when you see an aspen grove of 1,500 trees, they're all basically connected.
Yeah, they were one of my favorite trees. They're really easy to work with, especially, you know, the white, and when you use lighting on them at night, accent lighting, they really stand out, but there's just a high mortality rate on them up here. Until they get this figured out, we really won't plant too many aspens.
I know there's a lot of deodoras, for example, that seem to be doing well up here. As you mentioned, the blue spruce. Do you get a lot of I always kind of have to chuckle when I see the cypress, because I don't look at those as being an indigenous tree for up here.
And, you know, they had a lot of the cypresses that died when you were going to Prescott Lakes, and they didn't replace them with cypresses because they're really prone to disease or insects.
Gotcha.
But you mentioned the deodora, and that is one of my favorite ones. It's, people have to be aware. There's a lot of new construction being built, and they're planting the deodoras way too close to the houses. A deodora is a huge tree.
Yep.
And we were doing a development up in Prescott Valley, and we had to inform the landscaper who was out at Phoenix that they can't plant them five feet off the house.
Yep.
It's just not going to do it. It'll pick the house up and turn it around.
Yep. So we need to get into that landscaping idea of not only plantings but the design, but we'll tackle that as soon as we get back from break. Again, you're listening to Hammer Time, brought to you by Yavapai County Contractors Association, and we're airing on Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA 1130 AM and 99.9 FM, as well as 95.5 FM. So please stay tuned for some great messages from our ever so valuable sponsors, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Once again, here's your host, Sandy Griffiths.
Welcome back to Hammer Time. We're having a great conversation with David DeBoer from Creative Outdoors. And just before we left, he had mentioned a comment about plantings too close to the house, which is certainly not uncommon. Seems to be, I think, a little more common with first-time homeowners that don't stop to think about, gosh, this tree looks great 5 feet from my house with the image that maybe I'll get some shade in my kitchen window, only to find out that, gee, we're on the north side, and that's really not going to give you the shade that you want. And the root system 10 years from now is going to be encroaching into the foundation. So do you run into those types of things, David?
We do, yes. And sometimes I just drive by looking and it's like, what? And I've actually gone up and told homeowners who just had a landscape put in and said, you need to have your landscaper move this or move that or take that out because that's not going to work where it is. That tree or that plant's going to cause you some damage, or they plant right next to the sewer or whatever.
Yep.
They don't pay attention to those things. Some of our developments, as you know, being a builder, but in the northern part of Prescott Valley, we have really bad expansive soil. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those builders are using post-tension cable pads, mm-hmm. and they don't want any planting within 3 or 5 feet of their house. They don't want any moisture there. So then after the house is sold, they'll have some landscaper come in who has no knowledge of any of this, and he just puts plants in right next to the foundation of the house. And then you'll see movements within the fence or within, you know, the pad of the house. You'll see cracking because mm-hmm. they're adding water right to the base of the house. And there's a reason for that.
Sure. And sometimes when they go back in and put those plants, they're not back in, but when they put those initial plantings in, they don't pay attention to making sure that they've got positive drainage away from the house. So you got a double whammy. You've got something too close to the house that may be on a sprinkler system or a drip irrigation system, and any excess water is flowing back towards the foundation.
Exactly. Yeah. A big thing that is people add sidewalks to the back of their house, and it'll be 3 or 4 feet off the house. Now they've trapped water between the sidewalk and the house. They didn't provide for drainage. And now they have drainage issues, or they put the sidewalk where it's actually raining back towards the house, or the patio. They added onto their patio and they didn't follow the grade that was put on, the original patio.
Right.
And it runs back towards the house. So people are getting water in their house, or they're getting trapped water, or they can get foundation issues.
Sure. And if they call the Registrar of Contractors to come back on the builder or the landscaper, Registrar is going to look at that grade and say, sorry. Yeah, you didn't maintain your grade.
Right.
So you definitely need to be aware. Let's look back on this standpoint of design. When you are dealing with a new home, for example, in a subdivision or even out in the county where you have a blank palette, somebody calls and says, David, come on out and sit down with me and design a landscape plan for me. Take us through that process and whether you call in other people or whether you do that in-house, et cetera.
Sure. So usually when I get a estimate call and then they want to design it, some people have a bare minimum idea what they want. Hey, I want a hot tub, or I want an outdoor kitchen, or I want a fire pit, and that's all they know. Mm-hmm. So I can work with that. So I start pointing things out to them. Well, you got this neighbor over here. You don't want to see so much of that, or maybe they aren't keeping their property up. Maybe you want to hide that. We can do some larger bushes. We can do some trees, or we can put a screen wall up over here. Or you got a beautiful view here. Why don't you use, let's put a fire pit with a seating area. Your patio is all covered. You're always in the shade. Wouldn't you like to sit out in the sun a little bit? So we'll add another patio out or extend theirs out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we start. As far as the design, I've been doing this since 1984, so I've got a pretty good grasp on the design.
Sure.
And I work with people. We have 8,000 jobs that we've done in Yavapai County, so we can help them, and people can get to our website and get ideas. We also have idea books that we can give them from some of our different vendors. And we can work with them, and it's not a one-time deal. You meet with them, and you get the gist of what it is they want, and you come up with something, and they think, oh, I was thinking this, or we can move this over there, or we can go bigger on this, smaller on that, or I don't like these plants, let's go with a different mm-hmm. plant, but yeah, we want plants here, but just not that plant, we're allergic to it. So there's a lot of factors that go into design,
sure.
and it doesn't bother us at all to make 2 or 3 or 4 visits to come out and get that nailed down to where I think you have a better product in the end.
Absolutely.
You have something that you've put in, multiple ideas instead of just trying to one and done.
Yeah. So it's like designing a brand new home. People go in and sit down with the architect. They don't come out that first visit with a completed plan.
Sure.
It's a multi-step process. And the same really should go hand in hand with the architecture or with the landscaping process, because like you said, you've got a lot of different things that you can bring to the table that maybe they haven't thought about, or they may be very specific and say, gee, I know exactly what I want. I just need to have you orient it and give me some pointers as to how we can modify it to make it even better.
Sure, sure. And it's regardless if it's just for them or if it's an HOA, we can get whatever type of format they want. Mm-hmm. If they want it on CAD or if they want it just a simple plan. Most people just look for a simple plan, but some HOAs require something drawn up nice in a CAD, and we can, whatever it is they need.
Capable of doing all that. Yeah, you were talking about placement. One of the things, and I had to kind of chuckle to myself when you said hiding the view or enhancing the view, depending on what you're looking at. But you also want to be careful that you don't put your barbecue grill too close to the neighbor's fence, because all of a sudden you might be missing a steak every now and then.
Sure, sure. Or their tree's on fire.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, that brings to mind other things that people don't think about. Primarily, we're talking with people that's first-time homeowners, but they don't stop to think about the fact that their barbecue grill sitting underneath their patio cover isn't a good thing.
No, and you know, especially in the Prescott Valley area, it gets a little windier than most areas, mm-hmm. and that wind is always blowing that right into their windows. It's blowing into their house, or the overhead on their patio
right.
has stains on it. So you really want to get that grill out and keep it well ventilated,
yeah.
but you still want to keep yourself covered and protected. So sometimes there's a little bit of a pergola or something in our outdoor kitchen area
mm-hmm.
that you want, so you can actually get that steak just right when it's raining.
Yeah, I've had to chuckle and grimace sometimes when you drive by and see the wall of the house on the side, where it almost looks charred, but it's just because their barbecue grill, they don't move it away from the house when they're barbecuing. They just open the lid, make sure it's got clearance, but all that smoke goes up the wall, so you've got a stucco painted house that looks very nice and pristine until you come around the corner, and then it's all charred.
Sure. We actually moved an outdoor kitchen and rebuilt it somewhere else because it was too close to the house,
yeah.
and the heat on the grill was actually burning the side of the house. It didn't ignite it, but it was burning it.
Yep.
And you just, there's a lot of things that have to be thought of when you're doing these, and they have to complement each other. You can have a beautiful house and a terrible backyard, mm-hmm. or you can have a terrible house and a beautiful backyard, and they complement each other.
Yep, exactly. That's one of the things that I have to certainly keep in mind, because I have wood siding, cedar siding on my
sure.
house. So when we torch up the barbecue grill, I make darn sure
yes.
it's away from the house, because those will put out a lot of heat.
They do.
Without
yes.
question. So on a lot of your outdoor kitchens, or I should ask, on the outdoor kitchens, do you get involved in the plumbing issue very often, where people want sinks, or is that generally...
No, we do. Yeah, we run whatever they need. They got their margarita mixer. They need power out there. Or if they want to clean their meat or chicken out in the sink, you know, we do. You know, we do whatever you need. Full service system.
Gotcha.
We work with some of the other, you know, contractors in town. They'll do all the electrical. They'll do all the plumbing. You know, anything that needs it doesn't fall under our license. We work with these guys. We've worked with for 20 plus years.
Gotcha. Because certainly doing electrical and running gas is one thing, but when you talk about running plumbing to an outdoor kitchen, it's a whole different set of issues, because we have this little thing called winter and
sure.
freezing.
And it's got to, yeah.
And so that creates some different issues. We talked a little bit earlier about favorite trees, and you'd mentioned deodoras, which are beautiful trees. But just as another reminder, what David said is you need to think about how big these trees get. So when you plant that deodora within 5 to 7 feet of your house, you're unfortunately going to be taking that deodora out in about another 5 years.
Sure, yeah. That deodora needs to be at least 40 feet off your house.
Exactly. David, I'm afraid we've come to the end of our show, but we will come back for just a second. I want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of you. So, you're listening to Hammer Time. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hammer Time, waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Once again, here's your host, Sandy Griffiths.
Welcome back to Hammer Time. Again, we wish Sandy the best of recovery, and she'll be back with us next Saturday. So we will welcome her back with flying colors. So please wish her well if you happen to run into her. Again, we will really appreciate David DeBoer from Creative Outdoors for coming in, spending the morning with us. So David, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they reach you?
Sure. Well, my office is local. We've been here over 20 years. Our phone number is 928-445-9000. 1096, or they can get online and Google us, Creative Outdoors. We have a really nice website, and it'll link to other websites. Got a lot of ideas on it. Cool. It's shown a lot of our work. We've got a lot of our awards on there and stuff, so they can give an idea who we are.
I was just going to say, as long as you've been in business and the awards you've gotten, I know that you've got to have some great past projects that people would love to see.
Sure, yeah. And we actually, some of our projects as we go, they'll be posted online so they can kind of see them as we go.
With the progress.
Some of our bigger projects.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We've had past customers call, you know, talk to us like, oh, hey, I saw you guys are doing that job. I was like, oh, yeah. They can kind of see it from beginning to end.
That's neat. So a person gets a good idea of what the process is.
Yes.
So, again, one more time, please give out those that phone number.
Sure. They can call us at 928-445-1096, or they can go online and look at Creative Outdoors.
Super. David, again, appreciate you coming in to spend some time with us this morning. We'll let you get back out there to plant some more trees and remove and plant new turf.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Hammer Time.
Thank you for tuning in to Hammer Time. Waking up with the YCCA, a presentation of the Yavapai County Contractors Association. Heard each and every Saturday morning at 7, with an encore presentation Sunday mornings at 7 on AM 1130 by 99.9 FM in Prescott, 95.5 FM Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, and online at kqna.com. A library of past Hammer Time shows can be listened to on the Yavapai County Contractors website at ycca.org.
Break it down.